This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies Jigsaw, Happy Halloween, Suburbicon, Thank You for Your Service, The Truth About Lies, and The Babysitter. Again, Happy Halloween. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring some of my favorite Halloween movies. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Now, for the past couple weeks, I've been talking about some pretty serious issues, like Hurricane Harvey Weinstein's sexual assault and the Me Too movement. And to continue in that spirit, let's talk about something of similar social relevance.
Well, the scariest thing to the mind is the unknown. I'm David Pumpkins!
I know, but, like, who are you?
David Pumpkins, man!
Okay, yeah, and David Pumpkins is...
his own thing!
And the skeletons are...
Part of it!
Why are you a part of this ride?
To do this! What's my name?
David S. Pumpkins!
Any questions?
That's right, David S. Pumpkins. This was that absurd Saturday Night Live sketch from last year that just kind of became this meme of itself, a meme in the real world, if you would. I thought it was hilarious because it's absurdist. It's almost a Monty Python level of humor, but with this SNL sensibility, because Monty Python humor, Kids in the Hall humor, that doesn't work on SNL. You expect something a little more blatant. This didn't explain the joke, and there were a lot of people that were confounded by David S. Pumpkins, and that's kind of part of the thing. Well, of course, in the grand tradition of making movies of the Coneheads 20 years after they were popular, or It's Pat and the Single Guy, or Rob Schneider's originally hilarious copy guy sketch, you know, hey, the dudester, the dudemeister, whatever, that then just got run into the ground, which is what Saturday Night Live does best, they have made an animated special for this weekend, and here's just a little clip.
How's it hanging? I'm David Pumpkins. Any questions?
Who?
I'm David Pumpkins, man.
Are you a ghost or what are you?
My own thing. And since you picked the magic pumpkin, I'm yours for Halloween.
Is this like a known thing?
Just listen to my song.
And this just kind of confounded me because, I saw some of the writers from Saturday Night Live talking about how they came up with the David S. Pumpkin idea, and they bought that pumpkin outfit at the Halloween shop for like $12. They spent more on the promo animation for this David S. Pumpkins animated special than they did on the original sketch, which I find kind of amazing. And in a certain way, I feel like we're entering into the Ed Grimley Saturday morning cartoon territory. You know, hopefully this can stay fresh like the animated shorts that they used to have on SNL, but yeah, just wait. There's going to be a full-blown half-hour special on NBC next year for David S. Pumpkins, and it'll just grind it into the ground. But I like the original sketch. I'm not going to only talk about that. I do want to talk about a couple little tidbits of news. One of them I saw, which kind of, again, confounded me. And that was that Regal Theaters, in this attempt to try and get more money for the theater chains. Because if you don't know this about the way movies work, Hollywood's doing fine. The studios are doing fine. Movie theaters are hemorrhaging, and they're struggling because people aren't going to the theater as much, and that's why they're trying to bring in food and beer and Barca loungers, and they're trying to get you into the theaters again because they're just starting to see fewer and fewer people there. And one of the reasons people say is because it's expensive. It's expensive to go to the movie. It's expensive to get concession. It's been expensive for concessions ever since movies started. I remember in the 70s, it was like $20 to get your concessions when the movies were like $3 or $4 each. So Regal has decided to do the dumb idea of having demand-based, that's what they're calling it, demand-based pricing. Essentially, it means they're going to charge more for popular movies. Now, as I read the article, they're sort of trying to assume, oh, well, maybe we'll charge less for the flops, for the movies that not a whole lot of people are seeing, or the ones that are not 50% sold out. That's not going to work, because that's going to be the base, and you're going to actually just pay an extra money to go see Star Wars or a Marvel movie. Here's the problem. Unless you can corner that market, meaning that you can be the only theater in town or the only theater in geographical region that's showing Star Wars, it's going to fail for you because people just go to another theater. Charging more because you need more money from your consumers is one of the worst capitalistic ideas ever, because then fewer people are going to go see it. All this is going to do is increase piracy, reduce the amount of people at the theater. If you want more money from your audience, you don't make your stuff more expensive. You come up with better ideas. I think this is also partly a way for them to get away from the movie pass deal, that $9.95 a month thing that the theaters are enraged about. AMC took care of that by saying they're not going to take MasterCard in their system, because that's basically how it runs through to buy your tickets. And I think this is a Regal theater, but this is going to have impacts beyond it. I mean, I live in Columbus, Ohio. There's like one Regal theater. That place is already a ghost town. I can't imagine that people are going to go to that theater more if they charge more money for it. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is 12 Strong. Opens on January 19th.
Two planes have crashed into the World Trade Center, and an apparent terrorist attack.
19 men attacked our country. The 12 of you will be the first ones to fight back.
We're outnumbered. 50,000 Taliban Al-Qaeda fighters. We're on our own.
You want to surrender?
Keep your finger on the trigger.
Stay there.
Oh, God.
Of course, we've seen plenty of movies coming out for 9/11, and this is about the horseback riders who were soldiers in the Afghanistan war that followed. This looks okay. The January 19th opening date kind of makes me a little bit worried. I have a feeling it's going to I think they're hoping it's going to do what American Sniper did, but I have a feeling it's going to be closer to doing what 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi did. That movie kind of flopped for what it was supposed to be, and especially compared to stuff like Lone Survivor and American Sniper, which were big military movies that, now those movies got releases technically before the end of the year, but they were January movies in most people's eyes because they were wide releases. So I don't know. Plus it stars Chris Hemsworth, and he has not had a hit outside of his Thor movies. But we'll see. We'll see what happens in January. The other one I want to talk about is Phantom Thread, which opens on Christmas Day.
I feel as if I've been looking for you for a very long time.
You look beautiful. Very beautiful.
I have things I want to do. Things I simply cannot do without you.
Reynolds has made my dreams come true, and I have given him what he desires most in return. Every piece of me.
This is P.T. Anderson's latest film, starring Daniel Day-Lewis, who was in P.T. Anderson's There Will Be Blood. This looks boring to me. It's going to be that esoteric period piece. And, I mean, it's hard to even look at this guy and say, this is the guy who made Hard Eight and Boogie Nights and even Magnolia. His movies have become more and more obtuse over the years. And while I've seen a lot of the movies and I thought they were okay, like The Master, but then there was stuff like, what was that last one he did with Joaquin Phoenix as sort of the private detective and Josh Brolin? His movies have gotten very obtuse. And this looks like it's, I mean, it looks like he's reteaming with Daniel Day-Lewis, and that's kind of a buzz to it. But otherwise, this movie looks like it's going to be technically pristinely brilliant, and all of my film nerd friends are going to just go crazy over it. But I think for the average person, they're going to be like, eh, I don't think this is going to get Daniel Day-Lewis another Oscar. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Jigsaw and the truth about lies. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and do some movie reviews. And the first one is going to be a horror movie because it's Halloween weekend. It's, or what do they call it, Halloween? I've heard some people refer to it as. Halloween falls on Tuesday, and it's always awkward when you have, when Halloween falls on a Friday or Saturday, it is like bonkers crazy for like movie and events and sort of things. And actually, you know, Halloween falling on a Tuesday isn't that bad, and that gives us a jump, and that at least for the election day, we at least get a week until that comes in. It's always weird when you have like Halloween, and then 2 or 3 days later, we got an election coming up. Anyways, for Halloween weekend, one of your choices can be, if you want to see the new horror movies, you can go see Jigsaw, which is, of course, continuing the Saw franchise, which kind of sputtered and burned itself out, oh gosh, what, 5, 6 years ago? Anyways, here's the trailer. A run of grisly torture murders occur, leaving bloody clues that suggest the return of the notorious killer, Jigsaw.
Any identification on the victim?
Puzzle piece.
But Jigsaw has been dead for 10 years.
It's not him. Can't be.
This was on the body.
The truth will set you free.
I'm chasing a dead man.
Just running scared.
The copycat.
Live or die.
The choice is yours.
Now, overall, I have actually been a fan of the Saw series. I really liked the first one. I thought the second one was actually really clever. And the third one was good. And then eventually after they got to about 4 or 5, I think after 5, when they finally kill off the character of John, whatever his name was, who's played by Tobin Bell, and they pass the torch on to another guy, and that's when it kind of it started to lose sort of what the essence of Saw being. There are people who have horrible things that they've done, or they're not living their life to the fullest, and the killer, Jigsaw, has inoperable cancer, and he's like, you should enjoy life, and you're either not living it to the fullest, you're not really realizing your full potential, or you've done horrible things and you need to atone for them. For as much as it sort of pioneered that torture porn that between that and Hostel kind of became popular in the 2000s, there was a certain degree of, and I wouldn't say a moral compass, because it's still it's a torture movie, but there was a certain, there were rules to it, and there were innocent people weren't put in these situations, and that's one of the things I actually always liked about the Saw movies, at least the original ones, is that innocent people, if you were innocent and you lived a good life and you didn't harm people and you didn't squander things doing what you needed to do, you were safe. It was the people that had a dark, dark side or had committed crimes in the past that always were in the crosshairs on this. And they kind of squandered that in the last couple episodes. And that's why I didn't like the later series. This one, to a degree, it does recapture that original rule of the Saw movies. And it's kind of neat to see them try and bring it back without having to just crank one out every year. And of course, this is an attempt to revitalize the series. I don't know if it's going to do well. I don't know. I mean, Saw just might be a thing of the past. Part of the other problem is, this is what happens when you have a movie that's, I think there were like 7 movies deep into the Saw franchise. This sets up a story that probably would have been much more intriguing around Saw 2 or 3. Well, now the whole series had gotten so complex by the time you got to the last one, and they have to acknowledge that complexity. They can't just be that initial serial killer with a gotcha ending, which was what the original Saw was. So there are all these rules that has to that the Saw movies have to follow, and it does follow these rules, but in order to do it, it's like this acrobat kind of spinning around, and the actors aren't great. I mean, there's no one of real note. There's the guy from Battlestar Galactica who was a Cylon, and the guy from the Glades, and I mean, those are the biggest names you're going to recognize in there. Well, of course, you got Tobin Bell lending his talents to the movie to a certain degree. But these movies, like the first one they had like Danny Glover and Dina Meyer. I mean, they actually had some big names in the movie. And I think they had Donnie Wahlberg in like the second one or something like that, or the third one. This one, the stars are like from television, and from television in the sense that they did a show like 10 years ago. They weren't able to do the Saw movies before because they're too busy working on some TV show. Overall, it's a fine Saw movie. I'm going to actually say it gets a passable grade, but it does just feel like another Saw sequel. At least it's following the rules a little bit better. So overall, I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks. I mean, but just barely. I mean, just it barely just cuts above. Kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the truth about lies. A 30-something man bumbles around his early midlife crisis after his girlfriend breaks up with him, and he ends up striking up a relationship with a friend's sister after a string of lies bring them together.
We broke up.
When?
I was going to tell you tomorrow, so you need to leave.
Right now? I just lost my job.
You always said she was the one.
Well, she was one of the ones.
Did you mean my sister Rachel?
How have I never seen her before?
Dude, you got to hook it up. What, are you nuts? You're the Grinch that stole Christmas.
I'm totally into yoga.
You went to Harvard?
Yes, I did.
Yes, I actually ran my own company.
So you lied to me about everything?
No, I was never more honest in my life than when I was lying about all that.
A couple weeks ago, I lamented the fact that I have been seeing so many movies about some guy who can't get his life together, and he just loves this girl, and he follows, and it's sort of this emotional tissue of a movie. And this one has a slightly different angle to it, in the sense that Fran Kranz, who was in like movies, he was in like The Dollhouse, the TV show, and he was in Cabin in the Woods. He plays this guy, and he's a kind of a loser. I mean, he's in his mid-30s working at a cell phone store, and he's has a relationship, but then of course he gets dumped. So it has that same opening that every single independent comedy has of the guy falling down his luck. Those work if you're in your 20s. And this is, I think, because I was talking about the one with Justin Long and that wedding a couple weeks ago. And when you're in your 30s and that's happening, that's just kind of pathetic. And I know that in this generation that people are sort of getting their crap together in their 30s. I had my crap together in my 20s, you know, and maybe that just puts me ahead of the game. I mean, I'm 10 years older than just generally the people in these movies. And the other thing is Odette Annabelle, who's gorgeous and beautiful, and she's wonderful. She's not a bad actress, but she's not a revelation or anything. She plays the love interest in this. And the problem is that this does kind of come from a certain sexist perspective where she is the trophy to be won. And his ex-girlfriend is also a trophy to be won, ironically played by the waitress from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, who is the epitome of a trophy to be won in that show. But Odette Annabelle's character, there's no real depth to her, and there's not a whole lot of, there's not a strong character, and it's sad because they give her plenty of screen time, they give her a lot to do, but she's kind of an idiot, and she's kind of a flibbertigibbet, and she's a big mess on her own, but she's of course a very cool and calculated and beautiful and well-kept and neat mess, but there's no depth to her, there's no reality to her. So the joke of this is that it goes lie after lie after lie, and the lies work to a certain degree, and then he suddenly, you know, eventually it all comes crashing down like a house of cards. It falls again into that territory of whiny emotional tissue of a guy who can't get his life together, and I'm just tired of watching that. And the ending just rushes through and doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, it has some funny moments, and the actors are good at what they do. But I'm just going to have to say that The Truth About Lies kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Suburbicon, and thank you for your service.
seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue talking about movies. Unfortunately, we don't have a horror movie in this segment. I know it's Halloween weekend, and I don't have a horror movie. I can't just only do horror movies. I mean, it's weird because Hollywood rarely actually releases a lot of horror movies in October. Usually they release horror movies in January and August, and I think a lot of that is so you can get DVD play. I don't know how many people actually go to a movie theater to see horror movies anymore. There was a time where if it was Halloween, they had a Saw movie, and those did very well right the weekend of Halloween, like this time. And then after that, there was the Paranormal Activity movies that all opened on Halloween. But really, you don't see a whole lot of horror movies being released in the theaters, major wide release. I mean, even like the biggest one we've had this year was It, and that was released in early September, which is a more common time for horror movies. And I think that's for two reasons. I think there's a lot of people watching horror movies on digital platforms and DVD and direct downloads and that sort of thing. Or if they're going to a theater, they're going to see repertory films like the original Halloween or Nightmare on Elm Street or Fright Night or any of the slasher movies. A couple weeks ago, I went to a horror movie marathon. Those are the things that people are going to theaters to see in terms of horror movies nowadays. They're not going to see the brand new ones because they're not tested. I mean, you could say, well, we could try the Jigsaw movie and it could be garbage, or we can go see Halloween, John Carpenter's Halloween, and we know that's a good movie. So I think home video and sort of these specialty programmings of independent movie houses, which I love, I think that's actually drawing people away from horror movies in the major theaters. And that's why we get movies like Suburbicon opening this week. In an idyllic subdivision in the 1950s, a black family moves in, causing an uproar while a real crime is happening under everybody's nose.
Nikki, you need to get up. There are men in the house. Son, there's something I have to tell you.
Those men killed Mom.
We've decided it'd be best if your Auntie Margaret came and stayed with us.
Nikki needs a mother.
We'll be strong. We'll be fine.
Mr. Lodge?
Yes.
You know a character named Rizzoli? He's a loan shark.
If you were into the mob for money, that might explain what happened to your wife.
This is directed by George Clooney, but it's written by the Coen brothers. And it's funny, when I went to go see it, I actually wasn't even aware that George Clooney directed it. I thought it was all the Coen brothers' movie. Of course, once it started rolling, I'm like, well, this doesn't have the finesse that the Coen brothers have. The Coen brothers have a real steady hand, and they have a real style that becomes noticeable. You could see their influence heavily in this movie. And actually, I was reading up about it, and they started writing this movie after they did, like, Blood Simple, like in the 80s. And now you've got George Clooney, who's a fine director. I don't have a problem with Clooney as a director. He's not very subtle, but he has a good handle on sort of the delivery of it. But his delivery it's not terribly nuanced. And you can see that in this movie. The whole sort of underlying tone is, you know, people are freaked out because this black family is moving in, when really the black family is totally fine. They're just a normal American family, nice people. They keep their lawn mowed and their kids polite. And everyone's freaking out about it and they want them to move. But then, of course, just the next block over, there's something really horrible happening with home invasions and murder and everything like that. And it's also sort of a common theme that we see, not the racial theme. And I mean, Clooney really does. He hammers that away a little more than he needs to. And there's one point, especially at the end, where it's a hammer right on a nail. And you're just like, we get it. We know what's going on. You don't have to explain it to us, George. So that gets annoying, and that's also, I think, going to polarize the audience. But you see the juxtaposition of nice, friendly life versus this horrible underbelly. And we've seen that before. You saw them in TV shows like Desperate Housewives or like Blue Velvet. You know, David Lynch's Blue Velvet draws a direct juxtaposition between the idyllic life of suburbs and some seedy underbelly crime that's reaching into the suburbs and drawing things out. Overall, I found it an intriguing movie, and it has some very funny moments, but it's not a comedy. It's very, very dark, and it can get very violent. And I think it's got a punch to a direction. It's got some great performances by people like Matt Damon and, Julianne Moore and Oscar Isaac's great in it. And they got some really good, strong performances to it. And it's an interesting movie. It's a little bit of a hard sell because it is so dark and it's not easily categorized, but I'd say give Suburbicon a chance. I think it's interesting. So I'm going to say Suburbicon rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Thank You for Your Service. Based on the best-selling book, we look at the lives of several soldiers returning from war with PTSD.
We wanted it to be perfect.
I'm home with my favorite girls.
I'm only human.
Two Army Commendation Medals. An Army Achievement Medal. Impressive.
You never told me you were a hero. Don't spare me the details. I can take anything but quiet.
You are my hammer out there. Don't let these young guys see you fall.
I don't belong here.
He did his job. Now do yours.
But before I even talk about this, I think it's worth saying, whenever I deal with a combat movie, I think it's important to point out I'm not in the military. My family's not in the military. I mean, my grandfather was in the Army and my uncle was in the Air Force. But really, my family is not a military family. It's not a combat family. I've never been in the military. I've never been in combat. So take that with a grain of salt. To people out there who are in the military or who have been in combat or people who have loved ones in combat or currently serving or God forbid somebody who's lost somebody in the military. I mean, I want to be as sensitive as I can with this. And I think I just kind of want to point that out because I'm coming at this completely from a civilian angle. This movie, I think, is hearts in the right place. It really is. Because it deals with PTSD. And PTSD is a real thing that you can't predict whether or not you would get it. And I've seen numbers from everywhere from 10% to 30% of people from the military and veterans come back with PTSD to a certain degree. And sometimes they're able to treat it. Sometimes it's somewhat minor or sometimes it's very severe and it can ruin lives and it can cause problems and it, there's a statistic, they throw it out there about like, what, 22 veterans a day kill themselves. But really, I mean, that's not necessarily from PTSD. You're like a good majority of those are actually veterans over 50 who are dealing with other issues. But still, I mean, that it's higher than average statistics of suicide, for vets. And I think it's an important issue. And I think it's good that we're at the point now that we can look at this and say, PTSD doesn't make you weak. And it's something that can happen to anybody. And we need to be sensitive and we need to make sure that people who have PTSD get the help they need. With all that, present it as well as it could. One of my problems with military movies that we saw, especially like post 9/11, movies about people who are serving or their families, stuff like Stop Loss or Grace Is Gone or Lions for Lambs and all these military driven framed films. The problem that would happen is I think that there's a push that people want to make sure that we present the story of people who have problems and have needs afterwards. And this is why I actually liked how American Sniper handled it, because American Sniper showed that it was a real issue and showed it was something that people suffer from, and Chris Kyle did, and he eventually got killed because of somebody who was suffering from it. And it shows that as a real problem and something that even what you would consider the strongest military servicemen could have it. So, but that's not 100% of everything. That's not the full story, and that's not his entire story of coming home, and that's not just every reason, every little thing that goes wrong with a vet isn't because of PTSD, and I think it just gets so overplayed, and this movie overplays it so much. One of the things with the movies that came out in the mid-2000s, post 9/11, you know, after the invasion of Iraq, it made it seem like everybody coming home was a head case who could barely even make it through life, and everyone was holding on by a thread. And that's what this movie makes it look like. Everybody who comes home in the same unit is completely messed up, and that's really not the case. By overstating the problem, you minimize a problem, because then when it's sort of a more hidden issue, or if you know people that don't have it, you're like, oh, well, maybe it's not as big of a deal, you know, because it's just the way they paint it with such a broad brush, and it's so heavy and so depressing and so pervasive in this film, and it didn't seem like it was playing very real. And while they're good performances, and Miles Teller does a fine job, it's the second movie in the same number of weeks as being the real American hero, but you know, the good acting doesn't cover a flawed script. So I'm going to have to say that Thank You for Your Service kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Babysitter, Weekly Box Office, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Halloween movies.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
It's Kevin Carr, Spooky Kevin Carr, continuing on with the movie reviews on Fat Guys at the Movies.
Now you've got your fill of corny old guy sneaking up on you while you're trick-or-treating. Let's continue on with the movie reviews, and let's talk about The Babysitter. A preteen with a smoking hot babysitter stays up late to discover her and her friends' evil plans.
I bet B has boys over at your place all the time. That's what babysitters do.
911?
My babysitter is trying to kill me.
Are the attackers in the house?
They're downstairs having a blast.
Alrighty, babes, let's head upstairs and get the blood of the innocent.
This would go viral. I mean, nobody's done human sacrifice.
People have always done human sacrifice.
Yeah, but like, not in America with hot people.
This actually premiered on Netflix a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to cover it because it's a horror movie and it's Halloween. And if you're looking for something else to watch at home, it's weird how scant that the selection is for horror on Netflix. If it's not like within the last 5 years, it's kind of hard to find good classic horror. I mean, I love horror movies. I love watching horror movies from the 70s and from the 40s and from the 30s. I love watching it all throughout the years. But if you look at like a lot of the suggestions and selections on Netflix, it's really not that great of a selection of horror movies. And there are a lot of them are independent, and that's great, because I think it's great that independent filmmakers are getting their stuff seen. But let's get some classics in there as well. Let's throw in some Universal horror movies. Let's throw in some of the monster movies from the 50s. You get a better selection, I found, on Amazon Prime in terms of older movies. But I always like to throw in a couple Vincent Price movies when I watch my horror movies in October. But The Babysitter's a new one, and Netflix has been really aggressive in putting out new movies by major directors. This one's directed by Mick G, and I mean, I say major director with tongue in cheek, because let's face it, Mick G is a bit of a hack. I mean, he did the Charlie's Angels movies, and his Wheel Marshall was fine, but he's sort of like Brett Ratner light in a lot of ways. But he did this movie, The Babysitter, and it's a bit of a throwback to those exploitation or sexploitation films from the 70s, these grindhouse movies, but it has a little bit more style to it, and it's better written. What's interesting about it is how much energy it has behind it. And I've heard people who've read the script, they said they didn't think the script would ever get done justice, but apparently it does. And Mick G's version of this movie actually delivers this pop, violent, fun, modern movie that deconstructs popularity and social media and what the kids are doing nowadays. It has like Bella Thorne in it, and she plays the cheerleader, because the whole thing is this group of people trying to do something evil and horrible, and they're all popular kids. And usually in these movies, it's always like the misfits that are stumbling into this stuff. Like, if you remember the movie The Craft, which was about witchcraft, that one was, they were all misfits, you know, and this one is all the popular kids being the bad guys in this. And I have to say, The Babysitter is a fun movie. It's sexy. It has some smart moments to it. It has this, energy that's delivered that you really haven't seen from Mick G since his first Charlie's Angels movies, almost 20 years ago. And that's a good thing, because as much of a blowhard as he can be sometimes, he had some talent back then. And it's nice to see him put that talent into something without making this some ginormous movie that got away from him that, say, like Charlie's Angels Full Throttle did. So, yeah, I'm going to have to say, you know, for an enjoyable diversion from any sort of old horror movies you're watching, go check out The Babysitter on Netflix. It kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk real quickly about the box office. Unfortunately, Tyler Perry's Boo 2, A Madea Halloween, took the box office this last weekend with $21 million. That was not a big surprise to anyone. They all thought it was going to do well. It did not do as well as the first one, which is good. So there is a rate of attrition on these movies, which means maybe after another year or two, we won't see many more Boo, A Madea Halloween movies. Hopefully, we're just going to end these Madea movies eventually. Geostorm came in second with just under $14 million, which is pathetic and terrible for it. Not a big surprise. Nobody expected this movie to do well. It would have done better if it had come out 10 years ago. Happy Death Day is still going strong. One of the better horror movies that are out there, a little under $10 million. Only The Brave kind of bombed. I mean, not just kind of, but really bombed. $6 million is all it did. And the only reason that I could think it did so poorly is it cut too close to the bone. There are wildfires out in California, and they're burning people's houses. People didn't want to watch a movie about this. And then The Snowman flopped with a little bit more than $3 million this weekend. I think you're going to see movies like It and Happy Death Day get a little bit of a bump for Halloween weekend, which will be good because it's a horror movie weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I want to focus on three movies that I like to watch every Halloween, and these are some of my favorite films of all time. And they're just fun because they're seasonal and they're adventures. And yes, they're all from the 80s and the 70s. I know that. I'm an old fart. But you can't go wrong with this first one.
Halloween night. A small American town. 15 years ago. Halloween.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
That's right, the original Halloween, 1978. This is what started the slasher craze 2 years before Friday the 13th. And yes, I'm aware that Psycho was maybe considered the first slasher movie, but it was really Halloween that broke the mold. It was originally going to be called The Babysitter Killer, but they put it with Halloween and it's become a perennial favorite. And plus, it's just a fantastic movie. Very suspenseful, answers enough questions and keeps enough questions not answered. And that's what makes Halloween such a legend. The next one I want to talk about, also in the Halloween franchise.
You don't really know much about Halloween. Halloween, the barriers will be down between the real and the unreal. And the dead might be looking in. The last great one took place 3,000 years ago when the hills ran red.
Halloween, the chill.
Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. The night no one comes home.
That's right, the one movie in the franchise that has nothing to do with the rest of the films. Not exactly. And actually, there's a scene in there where they're watching a TV, and they're talking about the big horror movie show, and they're showing Halloween, the original Halloween. So in the universe of Halloween 3, the movie Halloween exists as a movie. And also, Jamie Lee Curtis does a little bit of a cameo, and she's an operator on a phone when you hear her voice. If you just listen for it, you'll hear it. It's right at the end of the movie. But this stars Tom Atkins as this beer-guzzling, cigarette-smoking, womanizing doctor of this hospital in the middle of nowhere. And he's divorced, and he's a terrible dad, but somehow he's having sex with this woman that he just meets at a motel. It makes no sense, and it reeks of the 80s. But it is so fun, because it is bonkers. This movie is nutso from frame one, and it makes no internal sense. The logic doesn't work out, the timeline doesn't work out, the physics doesn't work out, but it is such a fun movie to watch. Last week, I saw Boo, the first Madea Halloween. I couldn't even make fun of it. It was such a bad movie. It was impervious to being made fun of, because there was no way to laugh at that film. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, is a fun little goofy horror movie, but it is also completely make funnable of. And that, to me, is what makes a prime movie watching experience. And then finally, going back to John Carpenter, one I watch every year, and that is his best movie ever.
100,000 years ago, it found its way into our galaxy. Now the men of Station 4 have made a monumental discovery. An alien creature had frozen, but not to death. And man,
it isn't Benning,
is the warmest place to hide.
That's right, The Thing. I usually watch the original Howard Hawks, The Thing from Another World, which really isn't like the story that John W. Campbell wrote, but they didn't have the technology to do that. And then I watched the 2011 remake, because they're kind of fun to watch all together. But if I were to pick one that's the best of all of them, it's The Thing, John Carpenter's. It's a story of paranoia, perfectly done, amazing special effects, especially for 1982. Such great practical effects. And yes, there's some hiccups and wrinkles in it, but it's also this great story of paranoia. And you can, if you really want to sort of look for the underlying tones of paranoia and not trusting your neighbors, which you can do with movies like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, or you can just look at it as a horror movie about an alien that shapeshifts. So those are my three favorite Halloween movies to watch on Halloween or before Halloween or right before Halloween. And I watch them every year. I got them all on DVD and Blu-ray. The other movies that are actually out new this week, you got to check out War for the Planet of the Apes if you hadn't. It's a great film. There's also Annabelle Creation, which was a neat little sequel that was actually quite good and maybe even better than the original Annabelle. And then the Emoji Movie, which is garbage, and an inconvenient sequel if you want to see more about gore. That is it. I need to go. When I come back next week after Halloween, I'm going to be talking about Thor Ragnarok and A Bad Mom's Christmas. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.